Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN Studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, how are we doing on this Sunday? A jam-packed sports Sunday. We were talking about before the show started. Going to be a heck of a day.
Game 7. We got two of them today. PGA, it's a good day. It's a good Sunday in May, so it's something to look forward to, right? You know, I mean, I think it's awesome. We've got a lot to cover, and the game last night between the Mavericks and the Thunder was, I mean, what an ending to a game! What an incredible series for Dallas to come through that, and it's on to whoever wins today in Game 7. So I'm excited for it, Femi. I really am. I mean, I know we don't have any football games, but this is as close as we're going to get.
Oh, 100%. Well, we're going to talk some football today. It's the Lombardi Line. We got to talk a little bit of football, and we're going to do that with our guest, Johnny Avello, coming up in 30 minutes, sportsbook director over at DraftKings. We'll discuss him putting up all 272 of the regular season games. They have spreads, sides, totals, anything you want to bet on for those games. We can go ahead and get into that with Johnny. Then in hour number two, we'll break down the game sevens later on today with Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst. He'll join us at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific. And then to wrap up the show, 15 minutes after that at 11:45 Eastern, 8:45 Pacific, our buddy Wes Reynolds, host of VSiN Tonight and the Long Shots podcast. Like you said, it's the final round of a major today, the PGA Championship over at Valhalla in Louisville. We'll get Wes's thoughts on what he expects to see on the final round, which I think is going to be an awesome, awesome final round of a major. We've got a lot of big names atop the leaderboard. Anything can happen, so I can't wait to see what happens later on this afternoon. But let's talk about that NBA game that we saw last night. The Mavericks beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 117-117. 116. OKC, they cover. They get to the window if you bet them on the side, but the Mavericks advance, winning the series in six games. Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, I mean, a really nice performance for those guys. They weren't overly dominant. Luka with 29, he had a triple-double, 29, 10, and 10, so I guess he was pretty dominant. But Kyrie Irving, Derrick Jones, I mean, just a total team effort from this Mavericks team, which at some point in that game, I thought we were going to get another Game 7, Michael, but Dallas prevailed in the end.
Well, I mean, look, that challenge at the end of the game was iffy, right? I think to me, you know, once he lost the challenge, they lose their timeout. And so now, you know, he makes the two free throws, which gives them the 1-point lead. And then he has to miss the second one because they don't have any timeouts to advance the ball. If he doesn't challenge the play, right, if he doesn't challenge it, you know, he's got a chance to get the ball half to the court. If they would have overruled the, if he would have won the challenge, right? Yep. He still would have been a point down because they ended up fulfilling the play. So a lot of ways to go here, but I think that timeout probably was more important than the challenge. I guess he felt like he had to make the challenge, but look, this was a game in the first half. When you look at it, Doncic and Irving turned the ball over way too many times. They had 11 of the 17 turnovers between the two of them. And once they started to clamp down defensively, you know, especially in the second half where they could finally get control of the game, I think it was fun to watch. And, you know, I think Dallas is a sleeping team. If they get Kleber back for the next series, I think that's going to be huge.
It's going to be really, really big. And Michael, we actually have a special guest that joined us in the studio here at Circa. I mean, you never know what you're going to get at the Circa Resort and Casino here. The one and only Derek Stevens is with us here in studio. And I'm sure we'll take the camera here with a two shot. Derek, have you slept since EDC? How's it been going?
What do you mean slept? I'm just coming back in. I walked in. I thought this was Monday. I thought we're supposed to do our hit, right?
Yeah, you never know.
I walked in. I see with Michael on. My batteries are still working, so I'm all right.
I mean, Michael, look at this outfit that Derek has on. I mean, it's a hell of an outfit.
I saw he and his wife in the parking down there by where all There's the limos are dressed like that. And I'm thinking, man, Derek's having a hell of a freakus.
Michael, my wife, Nicole, and Michael knows her very well. There's nothing good that happens after 6 a.m. in the morning.
All right. Well, there he is. Grand opening, grand closing. The one and only Derek Stevens, the owner of the Circa Resort and Casino.
I love it.
Have a good rest of the morning, Derek. You never know what you're going to get on a Sunday morning.
Well, let me just say this about our friend Derek Stevens. First of all, he is fully engaged in his casinos, right?
Yes.
He is a man of the people. He is around. He's there. You know, he's a fan first. I mean, the night of the draft, he's sitting there, and I'm having a conversation with him. And Detroit went on the clock after we got done doing the GM shuffle. And, you know, that was all he wanted to focus on was that Lions pick. So he's fully vested. I can't wait, Femi. I really can't wait for his announcement on what's going to happen with Survivor and how they're going to handle the millions, because I think that's going to be so much fun. I think Survivor this year, I can't wait to ask Johnny Avello this when we have him on later in the show, because there's no, everybody can say Carolina's not any good. They're going to get the first. There's really no team that you just say, boy, that team's really not going to be very good. Usually you go into the season. Last year, Arizona, not very good. Mm-hmm. Thought Houston with a rookie quarterback, not very good. They obviously lied to us and became very good. But I just think this is a hard season. It seems like there's a lot of teams clustered together. We'll see how it all plays out. But you gotta love his enthusiasm, Derek. I mean, he is a man of the people. He's around. And, you know, for a guy that owns the casino, he's not sitting up in some suite watching him from above. He's engaged.
Oh, he's in the trenches. He is in the trenches out here. They're posted up at Mega Bar. They've been hanging out. I mean, for those who don't know, there's the EDC, I think Electric Daisy Carnival or whatever it's called. It's a nice like EDM concert festival that's been going on since Friday here in Las Vegas. So a lot of folks have been in town for that. And from what I've heard, It's been quite eventful out there. So Derek Stevens been hanging out all night and early into the mornings here as he joins us here on the Lombardi Line of the DraftKings Network. But we were saying, let's get back to this NBA game, the Thunder and the Mavericks. Did you think that it was a foul when you saw the play on PJ Washington? It's like he got the arm late.
I thought it really was a he did get the arm, you know, so to me, it wasn't worth the challenge. Like, let him go and make all three, right? And then you could advance the ball and get a chance for Alexander to take a shot. You might win the game. I didn't think it was worth I thought the timeout at that situation was more important than the challenge. Because even if you won the challenge, you were down by a point, right? You were down by a point, and now you got the ball at half court and you had a chance to win the game. But once you lost the challenge, you couldn't advance the ball. And advancing the ball with 2.5 seconds became the most important thing. Now, obviously, give credit to P.J. Washington for making the first two. That was really good. I mean, he's 3 for 5 in the game at the free throw line. And, you know, he went into there at 1 for 3 going into that setting there, and he made both of them. So give him great credit. But look, I think Dallas is kind of an undervalued team a little bit. They have two legitimate superstars. And Irving, his intensity on defense has improved. There's no question.
Yeah.
I mean, you just know that he's engaged. His personality is a completely different Kyrie Irving than we've used to, whether it's Brooklyn or Boston. And Luka, you know, for all the conversation about him being hurt, you know, he puts a triple-double up. I don't think he's as hurt as he wants everybody to think he is. And this Lively kid comes off the bench and gives them some, I mean, 15 rebounds, Femi, last night. You know, 15 rebounds, he's plus 26 for the game. You know, so fun team to watch. I think they're really good. They're only going to get better too, right? They're only going to improve Dallas. And same thing for the Thunder. I mean, with Gildas Alexander, I mean, he's an elite player, right?
Yeah.
They've got to sort through this Giddy thing. They didn't start him. Isaiah Joe started in the game, so they needed to get somebody who could space the court a little bit better. But they have all these draft picks. They're going to solve that problem pretty quickly.
Yeah, they have a really good young core with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 36 points last night, 14 of 25 from the field. Chet Holmgren had 21. Jalen Williams had 22 points. Like, those are the three guys that Oklahoma City is going to go ahead and build around here. And I'm sure they'll add some pieces. Like you mentioned, they have a plethora of draft picks that they could use to if they want to make trade or draft guys and draft and play it out that way. But they can add some pieces to a really good team that won 57 games. And yeah, they were the one seed and they didn't make it to the conference finals. So like on the surface, it's a pretty disappointing ending for Oklahoma City. But it's just hard not to look at the future for that team and say, hey, the future's really bright. And with a really good coach in Mark Daigneault, a really top-end superstar like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, this team is likely going to be heard from for the years to come, the next 2 to 3 years, because they have a really good core there, the Oklahoma City, and expect them to be back later on in a really tough Western Conference, but they're one of the better teams that has been built well. And they're not going to be running around chasing their tail, trying to figure out the second apron tax. They have really built this team out well on cost-friendly contracts. Yeah,
I mean, and think about it. Since the trade deadline, they've improved their defense tremendously, right? and PJ Washington and Gafford have come in and really helped them. I mean, the signing of Grant Williams ended up being a debacle, but they overcame it rather quickly. They realized Grant Williams wasn't their kind of guy, wasn't in shape, wasn't committed. And I think a lot of that came from Irving and Doncic, you know, right? I mean, those two players, for whatever we think of Kyrie, and I have not been a Kyrie fan, but his personality has completely changed being coached by Jason Kidd. I think he trusts Kidd, and I think ultimately he's become a different player in terms of off the court. He's always a great player on the court. And I think that when Williams went there and he's overweight, couldn't get shape, and for them to turn him into PJ Washington and Gafford, I mean, that really changed their team, and you've got to give the Mavericks credit for reconstructing their team on the fly.
100%. And yeah, Kyrie Irving, the point you brought up about him playing defense, I think is one that we need to talk more about, because that was never been his, it's never been his calling card. Going back to Cleveland or Boston or all these places that he's been, Brooklyn, he's never really been a defender. He's always been a terrific scorer, but he's committed himself to playing defense. And now we're seeing like a really like high-end version of Kyrie Irving, which I don't know many people thought that he still had this in him, but he's been terrific this postseason. Luka Doncic battling through injury was really good last night, as Dallas are going to go ahead and take on the winner of Denver and Minnesota later on tonight when they see that game 7 later on. So I think it's gonna be a terrific Western Conference Finals. You can get the Mavericks over at DraftKings 6-1 to win the NBA title, and to win the Western Conference they are +155. So the Mavericks, if you're interested, still last chance to dance on those NBA titles and conference futures. But I think Dallas is gonna be a pretty formidable opponent for whoever comes out of this series that'll be decided later on tonight between the Nuggets and the Timberwolves. All right, on the other side, we'll turn our attention to the NFL. All 272 games have been released. Our biggest takeaways from the schedule coming up next here on the Lombardi Line, here on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, you can get some final round predictions for today's PGA Championship over at Valhalla. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumanns, Kelly Bidlin, all those guys giving their final thoughts on what's going to happen later on this afternoon and evening. Can't wait to see what happens. You can check out all that expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox. Visit vsin.com/newsletter to subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. It's going to be a fun PGA Championship final round. Right now, the top of the leaderboard, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa are your co-leaders. They tee off at 11:35 West Coast time, 2:35 Eastern. And then right behind them, Sahith Theegala and Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry shot a 62. He was one shot shy of tying a major championship record for a round. I mean, the guy was just came out of nowhere and then just went 9 on under on moving day. Talk about moving day. Lowry moved up.
How many Guinnesses you think he drank last night? How many Guinnesses you think he drank last night after that round? I mean, seriously, he had to go celebrate that one, baby.
Hopefully not too many, because he's got to do it again today. Hopefully not too many.
Yeah, I don't think he cares about too many. Femi, I think it's not too many, it's not enough. I think that's kind of where that goes, right? You know?
Shane Lowry, he's 10-1 at DraftKings if you want to bet him for this final round. I don't know if I would do that, just because like you always wonder, like, how can a guy follow up a round of 62? Can they really do much better? And he doesn't have to do better than that, but even if, can he really shoot like a 66 or a 65 the next day after shooting a 62? I guess we'll find out for Shane Lowry, but I'm usually skeptical of when a guy has an otherworldly round, how they're going to follow that up.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it all comes down to he's comfortable with the course, clearly, because he's been playing well. And when you're comfortable with the course, it comes down to, you know, your putting and your ability to make critical shots. And when you shoot a 62, your confidence is riding high. Now, we all understand golf is the law of averages, right?
Yep.
I mean, who would have thought Scottie Scheffler would have had as bad a day as he had yesterday after leaving the Louisville Police Department jail cell and then going out and shooting a 66. And then the next day, after a good night's rest, he doesn't play very well. So, you know, as we all know, this is a tough sport to handicap. There's no question.
Yeah, the jail to 66. I'm not sure if we'll ever see that one again for a player at a major championship. That was pretty impressive what Scheffler did on Friday. But we have the PGA Championship going on. We also have two Game 7s in the NBA. Let's discuss those before we get to the NFL action. 12:30 West Coast time, 3:30 Eastern. This is the 90s all over again. It's the Pacers. It's the Knicks. It's a Game 7 at Madison Square Garden. And the Knicks yesterday got some good news as Adrian Wojnarowski over at ESPN reported that they're going to go ahead and test out OG Anunoby's hamstring in shoot around. So we'll see if OG Anunoby can give it a go in this do or die game. Right now, the Knicks are 3.5 point favorites. So the market is interested. This was 2 yesterday. Now we're out to 3.5. The total is down to 207.5 with those game 7 unders typically cashing. How do you see this playing out? The Knicks have that awesome home court advantage. Can they get it done even though they're a little bit shorthanded?
I think when the Pacers play like they did on Friday night with that aggressive style and that kind of physicality and get some kind of control of the board, you know, and they ask and they put the pressure on Josh Hart to be a scorer, right? Mm-hmm. I think that became a real issue. You know, that game was close up until when they went on that great, 15-2 run Indiana did at the end of the first half, and they kind of put the game away, and they really make it hard on the Knicks in terms of once they get in their offense, especially as they're playing through this thing, it becomes really difficult for them to score. So, and it's hard to predict Indiana, whether they're going to, you know, whether they're going to play at that same level. We know Brunson's going to play well. We understand that. I mean, I know they make a big deal of who's guarding him, but Brunson, you know, in the second half of that game, you could see he was going to make his plays, and they're energized by the Garden's crowd. They're going to play at a higher level. I think it's really important. OG, if he can go, I think that would be unbelievable. Hart, you know, it looks like he has an abdominal strain. I don't know if you can inject that and make him feel comfortable, but, you know, they're beat up. They're beat up, and Indiana's not beat up. But there's something about that arena that revitalizes the Knicks and gives them energy and the ability to close it out. The game really comes for me. DiVincenzo's got to shoot really well. When they won in the Garden the other night before they lost in Indiana on Friday night. I think it was Wednesday night. DiVincenzo shot well. If he doesn't shoot well, he needs to score and take some of the burden off of Brunson.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, even if OG Anunoby is out there or if Josh Hart's out there, they're clearly going to be pretty compromised. They got to have guys like DiVincenzo, Hartenstein. Like, he's been awesome this playoffs, but he has to step up here just to help out Jalen Brunson because Brunson's banged up in himself. Like, he has a sore foot that he's been gutting through. So it is a mash unit for this New York Knicks team that's kind of disappointing. Like, I wish we could have seen them fully formed and healthy because they have so many guys that are injured. But even with the injuries, they've made it this far, and I like them today. Like, I don't know if I would lay 3.5. And yeah. I also don't know if this is going to close 3.5 because I think there's still going to be the news that comes out on both Hart and Anunoby. And whenever that news comes out, whether they're in or they're out, the market's going to react to that. So I think this is one that it's hanging out at 3.5 right now. But I think this could change before tip-off time.
I think if you like the Pacers and you know, if you like the Pacers, you better take this 3.5 because even if they play, how effective can they be? Mm-hmm. I have a feeling this line will, if Ojanobi goes out, you know, could it go to 3, 2.5? You know, the money line at -162 for the Knicks might be the real play if you like the Knicks, because I know you're giving up money here. But I think to me, we know this, it usually will be a tight game. But the Pacers' energy level, you know, they're deeper. You know, and when they play with physicality and Halliburton plays with a sense of offensive trying to score, they're a different team. The thing is, every time McConnell has more shots than Halliburton, you always wonder, like, McConnell comes out there on the court and he's looking to get points. And he's usually a distributor. But in this series, he can score. And I think when Halliburton takes that scoring mentality, too, they become a different team.
Yeah, Halliburton, sometimes he defers a little bit too much, but when he decides to go and get his buckets, he's a really terrific player. And it's looking like the Tyrese Halliburton that we saw in the in-season tournament prior to the injury that he suffered at the midway point of this regular season. He's been terrific so far in this postseason. How about later on tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock West Coast time, T-Wolves, Nuggets, Game 7. This has been twists and turns in this series. You think one team is dead, then the other team comes back, you think they're going to close it out, and then the T-Wolves come back and blow them out. 45-point victory in Game 6. It's a 5-point spread tonight. The total's at 198. What do you think happens?
I mean, I've been so wrong on this series the whole time. I thought Denver would close them out. You know, and Minnesota, I don't think Minnesota has two assistants that have been with Malone before. And and they understand Denver. They know how to play Denver, and I think they finally made the adjustments in Game 6 to get this to Game 7 at the home court. But look, they've won two already on their home court. Can they win three? I mean, look, if you're the defending champion and you lose Game 7 on your home court after a team has already beaten you twice there, you know, that tells you the other, you know, that's remarkable. To win four games and three on the road is really somewhat remarkable. I don't know how you don't play Denver here. I know Minnesota's really young, athletic. Conley is really the glue to hold everything together. But we finally saw them play defense the other night, right? They finally played defense, and that was the key, because into the series, the last two games before the one in Minnesota, they were not playing very good defense at all, you know, and I think that was really the issue. I mean, when you look at it, and then they hold Denver to 70 points. I mean, remember, the two games before that Denver was 52% from the field. Then they went up to 55% from the field. And then in this game, they shot 30% from the field. Like, I don't know how to handicap that, right? I mean, this game was over quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the games have been, like outside of game one, we've seen quite a bit of just dominant performances and blowouts in the series, even though we're getting all the way to a game seven. I think the key, like, once again, I've been saying it all series, what Jamal Murray are we going to get? In game six, it was 4 of 18, 10 points, and a minus 32 box plus minus. It wasn't the Jamal Murray that we saw in games 3, 4, and 5, the one that looked like the guy that we've been seeing over the course of his career in these playoffs. It looked like the guy that's a little bit banged up. Now, you give the Timberwolves all the credit. Like, Jaden McDaniels, he was able to stay out of foul trouble. I think that's a big component to this series and how things match up and what T-Wolves do with their rotation. They got to keep him on the floor because he has been giving Murray a lot of problems with his size and the length and just his athletic ability. So the Nuggets are going to need the Jamal Murray that we saw earlier this series if they're going to win this game. I think Denver wins, but Minnesota really does match up really well just because of their size and what they're able to do on the defensive perimeter to make things really difficult. Like Joker, he can get all of his points, but if the other guys aren't coming along with him, maybe we do see the upset and the improbable victory for the Minnesota Timberwolves, because I think before this series started, people liked Minnesota in the terms of the X's and O's matchup and how they matched up with Denver, but I don't think many people expected them to win the first two games in Denver and to potentially win a third game in Denver to win this series. I don't think anybody had that in their cards for this one. So I have that Nuggets ticket.
You
that
got
I
Scott
bet
Foster
after game one.
Coming to Denver tonight.
Oh, no.
You got Scott Foster coming to Denver tonight. What do you think? How are you playing that one? You trusting your money with Scott Foster? I don't know. I mean, I'll ask Johnny Avella how he feels about that one. I don't know. Mark Davis is going to do he's the crew chief for the Indiana at New York game. So look, I would be a little nervous on Scott Foster. Game seven, trust me, we'll see more of Scott Foster, you know, than we'll see of the game, actually. He'll be over at that table half the time.
Let's go over to the monitor and take a look at what happened here. Gosh, I can't. Now I'm upset. Johnny Avella is going to join us on the other side. DraftKings Sportsbook Director will discuss the NFL schedule release here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What if I told you that you could up your betting game over the next 14 months for less than 50 cents a day? That sounds like a hell of a deal, doesn't it? It sounds like one to me. And you can do that here with a VSiN Pro subscription, normally priced at $240. Now you can grab it for just $199 by going to VSiN.com/subscribe when you use promo code Lombardi. You have to use that promo code to get this deal. You're going to get the daily best bets, the leaderboard, the ROIs, the betting systems, the analysis, 19 hours of live programming. I mean, all the expert analysis that you can desire. VSiN.com/subscribe to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro, which is $199 with promo code Lombardi. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. And joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, it's our buddy Johnny Avella, Sportsbook Director here at DraftKings. Johnny, good morning. Hope all is well. We appreciate you waking up with us. Let's talk about this NFL schedule release. 272 games. You guys have sides, totals, money lines for all of them. When do you guys start this? Are you going along when the schedule's being released? Is it something that you're just waiting and you already have it ready to go? How can you guys get all these games up so quickly over at DraftKings Sportsbook?
Yeah, good morning, Femi. Good morning, Mike. I must say we're really prepared for this. So we have our power ratings ready to go. We anticipate some of the games. We get some of the games off of, Twitter. Some are released early. We kind of cheat a little bit, not like deflate gate, anything like that. But, you know, we just find that some of the teams get their schedules a little earlier and they release them themselves. And so we get a little heads up on it. And so therefore, we start putting those games up. I mean, we can put them up in minutes. That's how prepared we are for each and every team.
So, Johnny, I've been asking everybody about who might have the first pick in the draft. Like, who is the worst team in your power rankings? Who are the worst teams? Because what struck me that I thought was fascinating, that the Giants in Munich playing the Panthers were only a half a point favored. So that tells me that you have the Giants in Carolina ranked fairly close in your power rankings. So who are your bottom five teams?
Our bottom, Carolina is certainly one of them. The Pats are one of them. Titans are one of them. And, the Giants are definitely in the bottom, I guess, six or seven. It's interesting how, you bring up that, Mike, and I'll tell you why. Because the Patriots were bet against almost every week that we put up, all 18 weeks from the initial number. So we had to tweak many of those games a half point to a point. So it looks like the public's going to be against the Patriots this year unless they show something early.
Wow. We're hanging out with Johnny Avello, sportsbook director at DraftKings, here on the Progressive Guest Line. So you've already seen action against New England. Have you seen anything else so far here early on? I mean, it's only been out for about 4 days or so. What kind of action have you guys seen for week one and maybe even down the line where people are registering their opinions because they're just so confident about how they feel about a certain team?
In week one, there were four games that took some pretty good action. The Falcons, we opened up two over the Steelers. That went up to 2.5. And even with a little bit more juice on that, minus 120. We opened up the Chargers 2 over the Raiders. That's up to 3, minus 20. So we're trying to hold a little bit there, but we can certainly get pushed up to 3.5. We opened up the Seahawks 3, and we're up to 4.5. That's a big move over the Broncos. And then the Patriots, as I mentioned, we opened up Cincinnati 7 minus 20. We're up to 9. So that's their game being bet against. Wow. Even in week one. How about this, guys? This is something that these trends that happen down the road, this is why this helps us a little bit. The Steelers games were bet under. Most of the games for the entire season were bet under. So that indicated to us, that the offensive coordinator Smith's going to implement a pretty heavy run game there, or the Steelers are going to have a really good defense, or a combination of both of those things.
Yeah, I agree. I think it will be a combination. I think they will slow the game down. They will run the ball. They're going to play complementary football to their defense. And look, we know the numbers. When Watt is healthy and he's on defense and they have improved their defense, particularly at inside linebacker with Queen, and then obviously with the draft coming through, they can be an elite defense in the front seven. So I definitely agree with that. As you look at this and we go forward with the week one, and you see this and the handicap in the games, are you surprised that Denver is it because of the rookie quarterback that everybody's on Seattle, or do you feel like Seattle has a chance to be good? That's A. And B, when you saw the schedule, did you adjust any teams over under totals for wins because of the schedule?
Well, first of all, we do think Seattle, I don't know if we think Seattle's going to be really good because the division's pretty tough, Mike. So we think they're going to win, fair share of games. They're an 8-9 win type of team. So do we see them getting to the promised land this year? No, we don't. And their odds are reflective of that. They're around 75 or so to 1 to win the Super Bowl. As far as regular season markets, we did make some changes. The Steelers, they were 8.5. They bet under the 8.5. So we moved, we were minus 110, we're up to minus 150, so that was bet pretty heavily. The Jaguars under 8.5, that moved to minus 110 each side, and we had the Jaguars, a little bit higher than that. We think that, we're playing them on the overside. But, when you look at their schedule, they just got a really, really tough first five games, and then they go to London for a couple of weeks. And then some other teams that received some action there were the Bears over 8.5, big play on them. That's up to -165. Cardinals over 65, over 6.5. That's up to -145. Bills under 10.5. That's now down to -130. And the Rams over 8.5. That's now over -140. There were some teams that took action on the over-unders. As far as the future markets were concerned, the Jets and the Bills both received a little bit. Little bit of love. The Jets are now 20 to win the Super Bowl, 11 for the conference, and 2 for the division. The Bears are now 30-14 and +265 to win a division. So those are two teams that took some action after the schedules came out.
How about that, Michael? Surprise, surprise. The Bears took a lot of action. Those Chicago Bears fans.
Shocking. Man, they Johnny loves that Chicago money. He'll take all that Chicago money. Nobody can move a number better than the city of Chicago. It's amazing. I mean, he's still probably taking Mitchell Trubisky MVP tickets right now. It's amazing.
I was taking Chicago money when I was at Bally's in 1989. I mean, and it hasn't stopped coming for all these years.
Yeah, you got to respect
it. I tip my hat to him, yeah. Johnny. I tip my hat to him. They put their money where they're – I mean, they're in. They're fully in on this. I mean, and they don't care what reality is. They don't care rookie quarterback. They don't care about new off. They could care less. They're all in, and God bless them.
Cash a ticket sometime, Mike. Keep playing the same team. You'll cash a ticket eventually.
I don't know if I recommend that, but hey, if you're a Bears fan, go ahead and have fun with it. Real quick, we got a couple minutes left. How about today's NBA games? What are you guys seeing behind the window here as we're approaching tip-off time, especially this Game 7 Pacers and the Knicks? Right now, New York, a 3.5-point favorite, total 208.5 here. What are you guys seeing over at DraftKings?
Well, it's no surprise that we're seeing Nick money. We've seen Nick money the last half of the season on the futures. Every game they play, if they're on the road, they're a dog and money line, so they get played pretty much every game we have them up. They're sitting at 3.5 now. I don't know if it's going to go much higher than that. Could go a tick to 4 possibly. And then in the second game, the Nuggets are they're seeing some play here to close this out at home. You know, it's a little shocking when you look at Game 6. You know what the score was. If that game was a little closer, you'd have a little more confidence in the Nuggets. But you know, see a blowout like that, it makes you a little apprehensive of what you want to do with this one.
How about Scott Foster doing the Denver game? Does that have any influence on your line at all? I don't know what to make of it, but I know there's something to make of it.
No, I don't think so. I tell you, the thing that I got the kick out of the most was the shot, the three-quarter length of the court shot. And then, you know, in Kevin's face over there, oh, my God, I thought that was so hilarious. That's one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen on a basketball court.
Yeah, our favorite character, Scott Foster, will be in the Mile High City for the T-Wolves and the Nuggets. Real quick before we get out of here, John, we've got about 40 seconds left. What's your guys' biggest liability for the PGA Championship? I know we're about to get underway with the leaders teeing off at 2:35 Eastern, 11:35 Pacific time. Who are you guys rooting against at Valhalla?
Well, we had a couple of guys that were big hazards for us, and they're long gone now. Tiger didn't make the cut. Scotty was in jail. I mean, we're in pretty good shape the way it looks right now.
The sentence, Scotty was in jail. And it's a real thing that happened on Friday. He is Johnny Avello, sportsbook director over at DraftKings. Johnny,
great
we appreciate
job, Johnny.
The time as always, and be well.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Scotty was in jail. Just Johnny Avello joining us on the Progressive Guest.
You know, Rory and Scotty, I mean, you know, I think when you take those two out of it, right? You know, I mean, I'm sure everything else just kind of comes into play.
100%. Yeah, a lot of people bet Rory after he won last weekend at Quail Hollow, but he always wins at Quail Hollow. That's why I don't know why everybody was running to bet Rory. Yeah. I'm like, that's his home away from home, and the guy wins there all the time. It's not indicative of what's going to happen in the future, but people went ahead and bet him regardless. All right, let's talk some NFL win totals on the other side. We're keeping it rolling here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. Thank you to Johnny Avello, sportsbook director at DraftKings, for joining us in the last segment. Great information from Johnny. We hit the NFL, NBA, PGA Championship with Johnny Avello all in a 12-minute segment. It was really good stuff there from our guy Johnny Avello, which leads us into our discussion here of NFL win totals. A little gridiron Goldilocks, Michael, as we break down the hardest schedules according to the win totals in the NFL. We have the top five. So it's top five strength of schedule according to the average win total that they're going to be playing. The Steelers are number one, Patriots number two, Browns three, Ravens four, the Vikings are number five. As bettors, how should we interpret these strength of schedules discussions, especially when we talk about it with the win totals, not just the opponent percentage, but with the win total and how we can handicap that moving forward before the fall?
You know, I think strength of schedule is really not something I look at because every team's different. I think strength of quarterback schedule is what you look at, right? So if you're playing Cleveland and they're a good team and they went to the playoffs, but are we sure Deshaun Watson's going to play good? You know, he's going to be a lower level quarterback. Now, I know they're good on defense and I know they're tough to play at home, all those things. But to me, I never really pay much attention to the strength because it's based off of last year's data. And you're assuming those teams are going to stay the same when data, when evidence has been so supportive that 50% of the playoff teams don't make it the next season. And so what happens to you is you overlook the teams that have an easier schedule. You overlook the teams that seem to have, you know, playing that fifth, that fourth place schedule where they get some breaks and, you know, where is that? So I think it's really overblown. And I think people are betting against Pittsburgh as an example because their strength of schedule is number one. Now, look, I understand it's hard. Don't get me wrong. But Pittsburgh will be a good team.
So does sequencing matter? Because I think back to the Eagles last year, and we talk about how like they started the year 7-1, and then they had the stretch of home against Dallas, bye week at the Chiefs, home against the Bills, home against the 49ers, at the Cowboys, at the Seahawks. And that's where they really started to hit their skids. Like when you look at the schedule, like does the sequencing, because Pittsburgh is a team that a lot of people look at the second half of their schedule and say, oh my goodness, how are they going to be able to navigate that? How does that affect teams to where it's like, all right, now you're on the tail end of a really tough stretch playing tough quarterbacks or tough teams? Are those teams like, do you just run out of gas? Is that sort of what happened with the Eagles last year? Or was it maybe some other things that kind of came to the surface that were always underlying with that team?
Well, I think that's the point, right? I think the Eagles were really slow on defense. Once people got a handle on it, they really found out that you could attack them. Their pass rush wasn't as dominant as it was the year before. Clearly, they told us that, too, when they went after Bryce Huff immediately in free agency. You know, they wanted Bryce Huff from the beginning, and they were going to trade out Riddick for him, and they traded Riddick to the Jets to use his salary to sign Huff. So, yeah, I think there's a misnomer here. The Eagles weren't good, and as the season went on, people realized defensively they were slow. And as the year went on, they were getting out of shape as it moved forward. It wasn't that they were playing a harder schedule. It was they weren't. Look, they lose to Arizona at home. Think about that, Femi.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, remember that game?
That was the Gannon revenge game.
So, yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, to me, that was more about their talent and their performance than it was the schedule. I think that's what you have to focus on, too, is what is the team? And when you look at the end of the season schedule, today in May, it looks really hard, right? That's a challenge. But if some of those teams lose their quarterbacks and have certain injuries to their team, it may not be as hard. And the teams are always changing. They're always on a different program. And so I think you have to really take a look at it and say, wait a minute, this might not be right. You know, I think when you look, like Dallas, for example, let's just say Dallas at the end of the year isn't the same team because of injuries. They don't have a lot of depth. You know, Prescott's, you know, maybe he's inconsistent. Where's Lamb going to be? All those things. They look tough on paper today, but are they really?
And vice versa. How many people probably saw Houston on their schedule last year and said, oh, yeah, we can get that win. And then all of a sudden it's the Texans team that's tough with a really good quarterback. And it's like, oh, this team that had a 6 win total, it was all of a sudden now a playoff contending team. So it goes both ways. Like what looks easy might become difficult. What looks difficult might become easy, quote unquote. So you kind of have to take it as it comes. Well, with these teams, the Steelers, Patriots, Browns, Ravens, and Vikings, let's take a look at their win totals and discuss whether they're too high, too low, or just right. The Steelers, 8.5, the over plus 125. Johnny in the last segment told us that people have been betting the under since the schedule was released. Now it was minus 150 over at DraftKings. Is that too high, too low, or just right for the Pittsburgh Steelers sitting at 8.5?
I think to get 9, we know this guy wins 9 games with bad quarterbacking. We know this guy wins 9 games with a bad offensive line. We know this guy wins 9 games with guys you don't know about on defense. And so I'm going to take the – I think the number needs to go over here. I really do. I mean, they've improved their defense. If Watt's healthy, and that's always important, but they are good on defense, their offensive line will be improved. I think Arthur Smith gives them a huge bump offensively. And he'll allow them to utilize Warren and Harris and get the ball to Pickens and Freiermuth, who's a very good player. I think it's too low. I think 9 wins is doable for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do I think they're going to win a Super Bowl? I didn't say that. Am I in love with Russell Wilson? No, but I like Arthur Smith, his ability to run the football. I like how he's going to manage the game. And I like Mike Tomlin as a coach. So those three things really lead me to believe it'll go over that number.
How much does coaching factor into your win total analysis when you look at teams? Because like you mentioned, like there's all these moving pieces, player acquisitions and all that stuff happens. But are you more so focused on, all right, is there stability in the coaching staff? And I like these coaches. So this team, more likely than not, is going to overperform expectations.
Well, that's, you know, we haven't gotten to Seattle here, but that's why I like Seattle so much, because where Seattle was bad last year, they answered it with McDonald coming in. And we know what McDonald was able to do with the Baltimore defense and getting production from players that were basically on the street. So if they improve defensively, Seattle, and they're no longer one of the worst run defenses in the league, and they can regain their footing on home field advantage where they're right now at 20-13 over the last two seasons. Then over the last 3 years, I think clearly they have a better chance to improve their win total. So, you know, and I realize the NFC West is a challenge. I get that. But Seattle has played well within the West, even when they weren't playing well defensively. And that bump defensively will be similar to what the bump we saw from Cleveland this year when they hired Jim Schwartz. So I think coaching plays a huge role here, right? Mm-hmm. It plays a huge role. And I think ultimately there's some uncertainties in coaching. How good of a head coach is Mayo? How good of an offensive coordinator is Alex Van Pelt? How good of a defensive coordinator is DeMarcus Covington, right? They're replacing. How are you replacing the talents of a great defensive coach in Bill Belichick within that framework? I know everybody's happy because it's easier on the program in New England, but are they going to be better? Now, look, last year, Rylan, the kicker, was killing them, and their quarterback killed them. They could have won more games. This year, with some question marks in the offensive line, I think you have to take a look at them and say, that's why Avella's saying everybody's betting against them. Whereas Carolina, I think Canales is better than, you know, what we saw from Frank Wright offensively and as an overall team structure. So you have to think there'll be a bump there. I think coaching is the most critical component in handicapping these win totals because they make a difference. And look, it's a player's game. I get that. Mm-hmm. But coaches make players play better because they put them in the right spot. They put them in the right situation, and they magnify their ability. Nobody wanted Kyle Van Noy in the offseason. He was doing Pat McAfee's show. Yeah. Nobody wanted Clowney, right? And they got 18.5 sacks between the two of them.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important pro tip, honestly, for this show is that like factor in coaching a lot. And people just look at the schedule, but coaching can overcome a difficult schedule and bad coaching can underperform with an easy schedule, as we saw with the New Orleans Saints last year. The New England Patriots, so do you think that's too high, too low, just right at 4.5, the win total?
I think it's probably just right.
Okay. Cleveland, 8.5, over minus 130, under plus 110, too high, too low, just right.
I think it's just right. I think in Cleveland, the issue here is, you know, they changed. This is a team. This is remarkable. They're a team that goes to the playoffs. They have really good success offensively, and they fire basically the entire offensive staff. And why did they do that? Well, clearly Watson wasn't happy with that staff. Mm-hmm. And so they bring Ken Dorsey in to do what? You know, like, what is he? Are they going to be an 11 team now because Dorsey was an 11 team in Buffalo? That's not going to work. I think you got question marks with Chubb. You have huge question marks with the quarterback. I think you have question marks within the whole staff there, right? And you got Mike Vrabel in the building who will certainly help because I think Vrabel's a great coach. But there's a lot of meddling going on in that place. I think 9 wins for them will be a challenge. I really do, because – not because I don't think they'll be well coached defensively with Jim Schwartz, but I think offensively it's going to take some time to sort this through.
Yeah, they'll be a little bit healthier on the offensive line. I mean, they were down to tackles 4 and 5 last year, so maybe getting healthy on the offensive line. Nick Chubb will be back and healthy as well. We'll see if the Browns can have some better luck.
But they lose their offensive line coach, Femi.
Yeah, that is
true. They lose Callahan, who held that thing together.
That's very true. And he's now in Tennessee with his son, Brian Callahan. All right, we'll discuss more of these and the NBA on the other side to begin hour number 2.